This week on Barbell Shrug, we interview Michael McElroy and talk about program design for CrossFit athletes.
Yo, this is CTP, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrug podcast, the number one strength and conditioning podcast for CrossFitters.
If you want to check out the video version, which you should, go to fitter.tv and watch that, because it's way cooler than just listening.
And how do you spell fitter.tv there, Mr. Bledsoe?
F-I-T-R.tv.
He's a good speller. All right, while you're there, definitely go and sign up for the newsletter. As part of signing up for the newsletter, you'll get a video that Mike made where he shows you the top seven snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting that next PR and lifting some big weight.
Yeah, look at the seminars, tune into the show, and get ready to become a more awesomer version of
you. We give you the tools you need to succeed.
You become a tool.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Chris Moore and Doug Larson,
and our guest, remember our names.
Our guest, Michael McElroy.
Did you get the right? That's right.
That's quite the name. Now that I say it,
I like it. It sounds like you should have been a professional golfer for sure.
Oh yeah,
he's
Michael
my
McElroy. Your up
cousin?
On the tee, yeah.
Roy McElroy.
Roy McElroy.
Yeah,
is that true?
No.
Oh.
Oh dang!
You just shrewd me. You had me there.
Michael is the
he does golf. I figured he knew. Yeah.
Michael's the owner and coach at one of the coaches. At CrossFit 2717 down in Jackson, Mississippi. And we're going to be talking a little bit about programming, program design. I guess that'd be the same thing.
Yeah, program design, coaching.
Programming, coaching, all that good stuff.
Anything that occurs to us, really.
It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Real quick, make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter so you can get notified of all the stuff we're doing. We got training camps, and we have some new video seminars coming out, which... pretty cool. The what?
The bar.
Am I? Oh, sorry.
Let me tell the audience what's going on.
So, take it away.
So he said the Barbell Shrug funeral. Is that what you said?
Yeah, because
he says
Bledsoe went out.
I think he's saying that I sound down.
Well, you are down because you made the mistake of drinking alcohol last night, and you fell asleep in your car and you slept there. So, I'm thinking of things that encourage.
That was the safest decision at the time.
It was.
Just sleep in the car.
And I'm thinking of things that encourage recovery and positive attitudes and like mindfulness, and none of that fits with sleeping in a car in a bar parking lot. But you did make a good decision. Like, okay.
Well, I was tired.
Yeah, so, and your seat was suitable for sleeping. But you pick it up now, homie.
Yeah.
We're officially ignoring our guest.
No worries.
What is new?
Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself, dude. We said that you're the owner and coach at CrossFit 2717, but give us a little bit of your background and kind of how you got into CrossFit.
Yeah, so like I said, Doctor said earlier, I grew up as a golfer, so I didn't really have much weight training background or anything. I got into CrossFit about 8 years ago when I was in college. Somebody showed me the website, did Angie for the first time, you know, same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. Which one's Angie?
100 pull-ups, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats.
Wow. Pretty vicious.
Squats
so
are the worst part.
8 years of CrossFit, that's a long time to be doing CrossFit. Most people did not find out about CrossFit 8 years ago.
Yeah, so I started doing it up in the Sanderson Center at Mississippi State. And I actually came to CrossFit Memphis probably 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. How long have y'all been opening? Y'all been opening that long?
Five and a half.
Yeah. So it was right after y'all been opening.
Man, you're right there at the genesis.
Yeah, came in there pretty early and just started doing it from there. Did it all the way through college with, you know, everybody staring at me. Started the gym about 4.5 years ago.
Who's this wacko doing these things?
Started the gym about 4.5 years ago, and out of my parents' garage, been doing it there ever since.
You were kicked out of a Globo gym for working too hard or grunting or doing crazy functional fitness stuff?
Oh, Graham Holberg.
That guy's swinging a kettlebell. Get him out of here.
Graham Holberg went down, by the way, behind you.
Oh, no.
Rich even beat him at this game. Hanging on the wall. Sorry, Graham, but it's the truth.
I went to Planet Fitness one time and asked if I could do a snatch complex workout, and he looked at me very confused and said, I'm not sure what that is, but there's no deadlifting, no grunting, and no dropping dumbbells.
It requires all that.
So I walked out.
That's the place
where I've never been.
That's the place where you can't be a numbskull or a meathead, right?
They blow
a whistle on you.
Get the lunk alarm.
The lunk alarm.
Okay. Which one?
Planet Fitness, you get free pizzas on Mondays.
Free pizza Monday.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why? It's a gym.
How much is the membership there? Do we know yet?
$10 a month.
Yeah, it's cheap. Oh, it's like $9 or $10.
We should go join just for the pizzas on Monday.
Well, yeah, because a pizza
probably get kicked out when
you walked
in.
$10. A pizza will cost you $10.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Plus, you get the, four of them in 1 month.
There's just one problem. There's just one problem with this. You are a lunk, and you're not really loud on the
but
site.
But I'm just gonna show up. I'm just gonna show up to eat the pizza.
Or then maybe swim in their pool and go home.
Yeah. Do they have pools?
Hey, that's not bad. Well,
I don't know if they have pools. I don't think they have pools.
Oh. Yeah. So you tell this poor son of a bitch, look, I'm gonna do a snatch complex. And he goes, you might as well be speaking in like Sanskrit because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Just don't grunt, bro.
Yeah.
Do you tell him, no, I won't, I promise?
No, I just walked out.
Oh. It was the only sensible thing to do in that situation.
I think we should go get kicked out of Planet Fitness on purpose.
See, to be, will you wear
as
a hidden camera?
As long as he's there to record it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's worth it. We'll go. Where's the nearest one? Do you know?
There's one in Jacksonville.
There's one Hickory Hill, I think. Hickory, that's off Winchester.
Let's go. See, to be, mark that down on our calendar.
Barbell Shrug field trip. We're going to Planet Fitness. Okay. All right, so continue. Go ahead and tell us a little bit more about your background, kind of how you got into CrossFit originally.
Yeah, so like I said, I just somebody showed me the website. I was going to work at a camp for a summer, and all I had access to was a barbell. And at the time, you know, I just did the typical bench press, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, legs when I ran, which was never. And, yeah, that was pretty much
that
it.
That part sounds good to me, though.
And you didn't have a big sporting background growing up. You played golf, and then
played
you got into CrossFit
after
playing golf.
Yeah, I did work out.
So is golf a sport or a game?
It's a sport.
Okay.
And he told you that pretty matter-of-factly.
Yeah.
Don't question.
No, I did work out in high school when I was playing golf, but I never did any working out with the school or anything like that. I just, like I said, did bench press, which is not what you need to do for golf.
I'm just curious, because usually if you have a sporting background, you're used to some of the pain. Like you played football, you ran gassers for basketball practice, and you get in the CrossFit because you discover this thing that's reminds you of what you used to do. So you discover this brand new thing, which was this pain that golf is hard, and golf requires all kinds of skill. That's obvious, but you don't feel that. You don't never suffer on the links.
Probably need patience, though.
Yeah.
That's probably something that has a good crossover that most CrossFitters don't have patience, but I know golf requires a ton of it.
Yeah, a ton of patience, which I didn't learn until later on. But
like after you were
just swinging at balls, huh?
Yeah.
That's how life always. By the way, dude, that's how life always happens. You had this great experience, and these obvious lessons never occurred to you until you're done and you can't be good at the thing anymore. And then it's just left on you to teach other people your lessons, so when they hit the prime, they don't have to try to discover it again. I know it kind of sucks that you can never take advantage of your own wisdom, but now as a coach, you can at least share it with other dudes.
Yeah, and I think, there's something to be said for, you know, when I came into the sport or when I came into CrossFit, which was not a sport when I came into it, I definitely have a hard time relating to some of the clients that I have now as far as, like, being overweight or whatnot. I came into CrossFit with a 290 bench press and a 225 squat and deadlift.
Nice.
Nice.
So,
wow.
There have been some improvements.
Backwards.
Right. Yeah. So I have it written down on my log. My first overhead squat was 95-pound one rep max overhead squat.
Remind
is that
me
a strength thing or is that a shoulder mobility thing from years of only bench pressing?
All of those things, probably.
Both. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's funny on another podcast. So it was Rogan's podcast. He's like giving a spiel for kettlebells. Like, you know, I know tons of dudes who go into the gym and they're squatting like 225 pounds, and they think that's strong. I go, Joe, that's not strong. This is why you need us on your show, man. And then they try to lift then you try to swing a 100-pound kettlebell. Now you know what strength is. Like, nobody who squats 500 pounds thinks your kettlebells are hard. That's the problem, Joe. 225 pounds, like when you're in high school, like, man, look, you're squatting two plates, bro. And now you realize, every CrossFit girl in our gym could probably do that.
Yeah.
That's entry level stuff, homie.
Yeah. I think a lot of people that get into it and come to my gym that want to compete don't realize, you know, they see what I do now. And just to give a little background on that, as far as competing and stuff, I've competed at the last three regionals up to this year. I didn't make it this year, but made it to the three before that. And they just come in and see that they may think that I'm just a natural athlete and been doing strength stuff this whole time, but don't realize that I came from that kind of background. I have two of my other stats that I like to point out are, the first time I did Diane, I scaled the deadlift, not the handstand push-up, scaled the deadlift to 185 and did it in like 20 minutes. And then at regionals, last year when they had Diane for that first workout, it was 230. So and that's 8 years later.
That's two minutes and 30 seconds.
That's not natural talent.
Yeah.
That's all hard work is what you're saying.
And smart programming, getting on good programs that kind of pointed me in the right direction.
That's kind of like McGolder. Came from like 13 minutes on Fran, slowly down to sub two.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first Fran was like 18 minutes.
18 minutes?
Yeah.
Dang.
I've done it under 20.
I remember doing Diane, and it was one of those things where, for me, it was like the handstand push-ups were crushing me. And I remember it being like 40 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, the handstand push-ups were
That's how bad of an athlete I am. Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time, really, on any of the CrossFit movements where gravity is involved. Anything where I got to go against gravity is kind of tough.
So you did at CrossFit.com for how long?
I did CrossFit.com for probably 6 months. I didn't stay on it very long. I wasn't ever too crazy about it. I actually did Ross Training for a while. I don't know if y'all have heard of Ross Training. You may have heard of the fighting
boxing
guy. He's got two books out. Mm-hmm. One of them's all body weight, and one of them incorporates some stuff. And it's very similar to CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Has a more of a set program though. So like on Mondays we did, I can't remember it now. It's been 5 years, but Mondays we did some strength work. Tuesdays we did work capacity. Wednesdays we did interval running, and it kind of repeated that kind of cycle. You know, so I did that for a long time.
Every time I've ever looked at his stuff, I've always been impressed.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
What would Louis say
that was?
Conjugate. We're living conjugate lives.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're gonna listen to Louis before this show, but when you hear that word, just understand that when you hear big words, I'm talking about this in Simple Strength. When you hear a big word like conjugate, first thing is like Russian science. Then your common sense kicks in, and you realize, I want to be good at things, so I'm going to try to do them all at the same time. That's what that word means. You want to be fit, and you want to be kind of strong too, but you don't want to compromise speed and everything. You just want to work on things together. In some way, that's copacetic. That's what that word means. That's what that program is. That's what CrossFit is.
You replace one big word with another big word.
I did say copacetic. Let me see. Everything jives. Yo, bro.
The copacetic training manual. That's what
I'm going to replace the words with this hand sign. Is this complicated? This.
You should write a new book on copacetic training.
I'll become what I hate most, a guru.
Progress part two.
Copacetic
training methods.
Copacetology.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, with the issues with CrossFit.com coming in, they want to do that, but there's no system to it. So there's at least got to be at least some sort of system to it while you're doing random stuff, working on everything separately at the same time, not just throwing random stuff up there.
Yeah, so no, your gym, you guys have two different training programs. You have kind of the regular clients and then the competition athletes, and they both have some type of thought out, logical, intuitive progression for each one of those. Can you explain how you program for the regular people versus the competition people and what that year cycle looks like?
Yeah, with the group classes, we still kind of work around the open as kind of keep us on track as far as what we're working towards and everything like that. But with the group classes, we're a lot more focused on just fitness and wellness and just wanting to live life healthy and not have any injuries and being able to do kind of whatever you want to do, as opposed to the competition blog is specifically wanting to get ready for the CrossFit Games, which
with health and happiness is not involved.
Right. Health is a kind of a back issue.
Kind of like our buddy Lauren used to say about weightlifting. Weightlifting is good for you unless you compete in it. And CrossFit's kind of the same way. It's good for you unless you compete in it, and then it's not
same
about
with
health
fighting.
Anymore.
Jazzercise classes are good for your fitness. Fighting a dude and trying to beat him is not good for your fitness.
No, it's about winning, not necessarily about health specifically.
Not jazzercise, like the kickboxing aerobics.
Jazzercise.
Yeah, jazzercise.
I was going to let it slide.
So what are we talking about?
Jazzercise is just like MMA. Like somewhere. Shit, I messed up.
Okay. I was assuming he was like implying like fitness kickboxing or something.
But he used the wrong terminology.
Really, in terms of awesomeness, they're probably right parallel to each other. I don't know. I mean, if you just make you give one a better name, was it really any different?
I have no idea what jazzercise is. So
you dance around. You dance around and get fit. Have a good time. Yeah, you dance around and it's jazz.
It's dancing without alcohol. That's
which is awkward.
That's what I hear.
Which
about
is always awkward.
It's craziness.
Yeah. I get it.
Okay. Yeah. So continue, please.
So the group classes, like I said, are steer geared towards the open as far as just wanting to compete there, give us some tests there, but more focused on wellness. And when I say focused on wellness, like for instance, we just finished a 10-week cycle on single leg work to get better at the squat because we got through the open doing a bunch of testers, meaning, you know, 10-minute AMRAP, 5 rounds for time, all that kind of classic CrossFit stuff. which in my opinion is not the healthiest thing for an individual, mm-hmm. just an everyday individual. So once we finished that, you know, I could see that a lot of people were not moving properly in the squat, and so we broke that down and did basically single leg work. Within the 10 weeks, we did two days we did front squats, once at 65%, once at 70% in the whole 10 weeks. The rest of the work was single leg work, and we retested the squat, and everybody's squat went up.
Mm-hmm. So when you mean single leg work, specifically, what do you guys do?
That's
a big category.
We started with step-ups, mm-hmm. went into Bulgarian split squats, rear foot elevated split squats, and then mm-hmm. went into lunges, mm-hmm. and that was the end of it. And then we retested the squat. So it just got heavier as it went. You know, with step-ups, is going to be lighter than split squats, and with split squats, it's going to be lighter than lunges.
So how does that transfer over to the squat? Like, what's the benefit there?
Well, the benefit there is, one, you're not loading the spine quite as much, but two, you're focusing when you're doing a normal squat with mm-hmm. both legs, you can easily favor one side or the other and not really notice it, and you wouldn't notice it unless you're looking at yourself from behind and watching your hips, or you may not even notice it then. You mm-hmm. make until you get on the single leg squat thing and you realize, wow, my left leg is way weaker than my right leg, mm-hmm. which is either, if it hadn't already caused an injury, it's going to cause an injury down the road.
So in a situation like that, would you have somebody, if they're doing step-ups, do their weak leg first and then match the reps on their stronger side?
Yeah.
So if you have a barbell on your back and you got a box in front of you, you would step up with, say, your right leg is weaker and you only get 8 reps, and then you match it with your left leg,
right,
to even up the asymmetry?
Yeah, definitely start with the weak leg to even it out, and the other leg is getting fatigued a little bit even if you're not using it. Mm-hmm. So we always start with the weak leg or weak arm.
And the key thing here is you are doing squatting during this. Right? The front squats are preserving the mechanics of the squat, and you're building
it.
No,
we didn't do any. We did front squats twice during the whole
10
weeks.
Oh, I think it's twice a week you're doing
squatting. No,
it's twice
during the whole 10 weeks, which was week 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. Now, we did do wall balls and some goblet squats and kind of an EMOM.
Still squatting in your conditioning.
Still squatting and conditioning. Yeah. But
you tested the back squat or front squat?
Just
front squat. Okay.
I remember reading somebody, I want to say it was Ben Bruno, did a full year of only single leg work, and then tried to come back and see how that would affect his squat in the long term. And basically what he found out was that if he was testing himself on high rep squats, then his, you know, his reps at a certain weight went up because he had trained his legs hard still mm-hmm. and got some great, you know, muscular endurance. But for his 1RM, it didn't necessarily go up because he wasn't loading his spine. If you do Bulgarian split squats with 150 pounds for sets of 12 for a whole year, and all you ever had on your back was that same amount of weight.
Yeah, when
and
you pick up the bar, it's going to feel like shit.
Crush you.
You try to put 500 pounds on your back, and your back isn't ready
for
that.
The front squat's different because what's limiting that, like, I know this intimately, Will. Mm-hmm. My life sucks when I front squat because I spent so many years, powerlifters. I like to be bent over.
Right.
I used to like to have the bar lower my back.
Every time you say that.
Yeah, I like to be
bent
over.
I like to be bent over.
Don't, you injected the pervy
injected
stuff.
Injected what?
You injected me while I was bent over. But, you know, I like to be in that position. So for me to crank up from this good morning low mm-hmm. bar hip dominant position into trying to be vertical.
Yeah.
Like, so your back doesn't have to be strong per mm-hmm. se, but you can't deviate from right up and down because mm-hmm. then you just topple over. Mm-hmm. So in the front squat, you probably could take this approach. If you're very good at being upright, then you're not having to hold your back in this loaded position, like for a back squat. Even if it's a high bar back squat, you mm-hmm. still have to be a little bit more forward. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But during this program, did you do any, let's say, heavy deadlifts?
No, we did single leg deadlifts.
So there was no traditional barbell work, basically. No, maybe some cleans and stuff, but
not
nothing
really.
Else.
So a lot of CrossFitters probably never done single leg deadlifts. How would you do that?
We did it with the clients. We just did a kettlebell. The kettlebell mm-hmm. was usually heavy enough. I mean, we have up to a 97 kettlebell in the gym, so that was usually heavy enough. Mm-hmm. I think I had maybe one or two people that ended up getting a bar out and loading it up a little bit more.
So is the kettlebell on the ground? You're on one leg. The other leg is behind you. You're hinging at the hips, picking it up, standing.
Yep.
And then
when you go down, you just kind of kick that leg back?
Yeah, holding it with both legs. Kind of like an inverted toe touch when you're warming up, stretching type deal. Like back leg goes back, going down and touch right in front of your toe.
You do two hands?
Yeah, two hands just to keep it more balanced.
Gotcha.
I think that'd be a fantastic. One of my favorite exercises ever for building the squat and deadlift is what I call a keystone deadlift. I mean, they do them in powerlifting circles. I think it came from all the Russian techs, but you can stand on two boxes. You can mm-hmm. do it with one leg or stand mm-hmm. on two boxes, and you let that kettlebell sink as far between your feet as possible, and you just pop the hips to raise it and do it for like 20 reps. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, if you need a guy doing heavier ones, you can just like step on a band and run a band through that handle, and that mm-hmm. little bit of band tension makes that single leg or double leg kettlebell deadlift thing, or swing even, a little bit of band tension makes the exercise like five times more effective, man.
I don't know if you need to add bands to single leg work.
I like it. Well, I mean, I like
–
in
single,
my experience –
I'm doing a single leg deadlift. I'm just trying not to fall over.
I think you should try it. During our bro, why not? We'll try everything here. Bledsoe and I and CTP are broing out in my garage on Fridays with squats. Doug, please come over next Friday. It'll be a blast.
You bet.
I'm going to rig up a single leg banded kettlebell deadlift for you with the hamstring that is all fucked up. We're going to do that one. I'm going to see how you like it. And I'm going to have you stand on a Bosu ball while you do it.
Sounds good. I'll do anything, obviously. If you saw the Louis Simmons episode, you'll see that I'll do anything. Yeah, I like the single leg stuff, especially like, you know, really far away from competition.
Right.
It's not, you know, as it gets closer to competition, you want to do things that are more like what you're going to see there.
Yeah. And but, I was actually surprised because the stronger guys I have in the gym, I really wasn't expecting much improvement. I was thinking, you know, this is kind of a maintenance phase. We may not get very much gains, but for the lower end people, this is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. And it actually helped with both of them. Now, like you said, the guy with the year long program, I wouldn't see much on the one rep max side of things for that because it's hard to do really intense sets with a single leg, you know, like one or two reps at a time. It's hard to get heavy enough for one or two reps.
But you're scratching a very important thing here, Nat. So your guys had this long – how long was this?
10 weeks.
Before they did this, how long were they really hitting all the traditional stuff hard? How long is that duration?
It was probably 2 or 3 months.
Think of it this way, ladies and gentlemen at home. Like when you think about periodization of what you need to be considering – Was this such a good idea for these people? Well, they have like 3 months of really working really hard and really hitting the barbell hard and trying to move everything forward. And they get good success. But the reason why you can't just do everything all the time, you can't spin all your plates all the time forever because you just can't keep that up. And you have this big cumulative fatigue load you've built up and you get better. But you take a couple months to do like something like this. And that big effect, that big burden you went through still translates through that time, and you heal mentally, you heal physically, and you're still working, and the healing and the break coupled with the novel work still allows you to get better mm-hmm. and sets you up to then resume and build upon the hard work you did before you took the break.
Right.
Like it's mm-hmm. a very natural idea. Like you can't push in one direction forever. Mm-hmm. If you have the courage to say, like, I'm gonna stop this for a little while, try something different, the next time around, that period will go better for you than if you try to just keep that up all year long. That's why you can't go in the gym and do those hard wads forever. It works for when you start CrossFit, like 2 months, 6 months, maybe a year into it. You need to go into this approach where you're in these phases. You can mm-hmm. still do all the things at the same time, but certain things will be dialed up, certain things are dialed down.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you were saying to us earlier. You don't just, you know, put people on the CrossFit like girl wads or hero wads where they just crush themselves right. and destroy themselves on a daily basis.
Yep.
You have a little more thought out than that. So
yeah.
Maybe talk about the differences, you know, continue to talk about the year-long macro cycle and how you incorporate sometimes testing
right.
with the girl wads and the hero wads in there, but more how it's training-focused and not just testing every day.
Yeah, so I guess getting into a little bit of my background as far as coaching, I've done both the OPT assessment and program design courses there, and then I've been training off of his blog for probably about 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago when I started that. And then I got trained by Michael Fitzgerald for about a year and then CJ Martin for about a year. So I've kind of learned from some different different people at different times. Michael Fitzgerald is James' little brother, yeah.
Right.
He's still up in Canada. He has Optimum Performance Training Canada site. So that's kind of my little background. So as far as like right now when we're far away from competition, we're doing more just kind of classic strength work, whether it's single leg work or just classic lifts, not in a ton of reps at a heavy weight, but just focusing on getting stronger and focusing on the aerobic side of things with what James has called MAP training or max aerobic power training, where it's a bunch of long intervals. Like I said, not heavy weight, just working on breathing.
It doesn't interfere with the strength stuff, really.
It's basically low-intensity cardio work.
Yeah, really low-intensity cardio work that's not on a treadmill, but that's using CrossFit workouts. So you're still kind of practicing those CrossFit movements, but you're not just destroying yourself with a ton of kipping pull-ups or a ton of kettlebell swings or a ton of whatever. So keeping the reps and the volume relatively low. Mm-hmm. So that could be like a, just a simple example would be like a 5 minute at 80% of five push hand release push-ups, 10 Russian kettlebell swings, and 15 step-ups. 5 minutes
just
of that.
Just moving a bunch.
Yeah, just moving a bunch. Moving the a next bunch. Rest a little bit, and then the next 5 minutes will be something totally different. So you're not smashing the same reps again.
Do you prescribe that similar to the way that James does where you say, do the SWOD at 80%?
Yeah.
Most people think all CrossFit workouts should be 100% effort all the time. But James doesn't do that, and a lot of guys are picking that up.
Yeah.
95%, 80%, depending on the day.
Yeah, I mean, all the if you look at the best guys, they're doing whether they know it or not, they're doing that type of deal. With the classes, with the group classes, I usually don't use percentages a whole lot. I usually try to explain it more.
They're meaningless with people who
right.
don't
they
understand.
They don't know what 80% is. They don't know. I say 95% for an anaerobic thing, and they're like, that's all out. I'm like, not quite all out, but
it's 95% all out.
Yeah,
5% less than all out. That's
exactly
what you got to do.
90% all out, 100% of the time, 60%.
So for the aerobic stuff, I'll just say, you know, moving at a consistent, steady effort. If we had the same 5 minute piece here and at the end, if we had the same one on both ends, you should get the same amount of rounds. So that kind of, that means I have to move slower than all out.
I like that angle, like. Anytime I explain to people, like somebody's like, what should I use for this thing, this exercise? Like box squats is a good example. What percent should I use? Should I do this plus this and that percent based on my training? No, man. Work up to a load, and when it starts to feel like you have to really squat hard to make it move fast, and if you don't do that, you move really slow, that's probably a good load, right? Yeah, it makes sense. Why would you want to go too heavy, right? No, because then I'll move too slow if you're doing like speed squats.
Right.
Yeah. Why would you... We don't go too light. Why? Because it's really easy. Because I'm not put. Yeah. Now you get it.
There you go.
Just pick a load that's hard.
Yeah.
Hard, not too
hard.
Hard
to know that feeling if you don't have a lot of experience.
You got to have somebody walk you through it one time. Once you know the feeling, then you get all right. And then next week I'll just do a little more, and I'll match the effort. Then the third week I'll do a little more, and I probably won't. I'll get a little tired then, and I'll go back to the beginning. That's all those waves are.
It's like a lot of people.
It's a logical way to push yourself and back off.
If you haven't been lifting for years and years and years, you don't know what that feels like. People aren't as tuned into their bodies as like.
Not
if you,
everybody can be a master of their physical form.
Yeah,
as
but
we
I mean,
are.
Like, there's, but like you know, we've all been training since we were young, so we've always been kind of tuned in.
Oh, and by the way,
we
spent like 15 years fucking everything up.
Yeah, but like we know how things
Not
feel
Doug,
when
though.
We do them. We know how they. We know how things feel when stuff. We do them, and then you know we get someone in the gym who's 40 years old who's never trained at all. So they've been living in this body for 40 years and have never really used it. And now you're asking, is this hard? And they're like,
"Do you tell them that?
Everything is hard." Yeah. Or, you know, it's really, really strange because we probably have no our perception of how they feel is completely off.
Here's what I see Bledsoe coaching his clients. Oh, see, I know it felt hard, but here's your problem. You've been living in that shitty body for 40 years. It's not your fault. You don't know how to use it. Thanks, coach.
Well, so why would someone want to do an 80% effort workout? What's the point there?
Yeah, I mean, the point there is just so you're not trashing your body, kind of like Chris was saying. You're not – when you get done with a 10-minute all-out, all-you-can-do effort, you're smoked. You're laying on the ground for 10 or 15 minutes if you did it right.
Mm-hmm.
And then – but which, like you said, it works for the first – 6 months to a year, maybe as you get into CrossFit. But after that, you're going to hit a stalling out point where you just can't progress anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to train that longer time zone, which has to be a lower intensity,
mm-hmm.
To build that aerobic base so that you can do you can handle the shorter stuff and recover from it.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's not, it's like he said, it doesn't affect the strength stuff as much. It's not as taxing on just your overall muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can still do the strength work and still feel good after it.
I'd imagine that lets you go slow enough where you can do everything correctly as well.
Yeah.
Like there's not as much slop involved.
Right.
Yeah, you practice over. I mean, what is it other than just practicing doing it right a million times?
Mm-hmm.
And getting comfortable going for a long time, just repeating. It's almost like a Zen activity, too. It's almost, if you swing a kettlebell for an hour, just as an example, mix other things in there. But if you stay moving smooth and consistently for an hour and have the repetition, have your favorite song on, you go to a pretty cool place. That's probably one of the better workouts you can have.
You can listen to a song for a whole hour?
Well, if you play
the
your favorite album.
Song in the world.
Look, put your favorite album
your favorite
on, right?
1 hour song.
There are some 1 hour songs. Put any, look, you ever comp, put an album
but is
on.
Is it your favorite?
Put an album on you dig, you know? An album.
What's the Disney song?
Swing
Disney
that kettlebell till
ends.
The album stops. You're going to feel fantastic. Just don't be a douche.
Mentally, it helps too because if you get used to doing stuff, You know, I'd gotten used to doing stuff. This is before last year's regionals. Getting used to doing stuff for an hour, taking some interval breaks in there and whatnot. You get a 7-minute AMRAP, and you're like, 7 minutes? I can do that. Yeah.
You can suffer easily for an hour. You can easily suffer for seven.
Yeah.
Do you find that helps new people not go way too hard at the beginning and then crash halfway through the workout as well?
Yeah, and it depends on the person. I mean,
it's like people who new to jiu-jitsu. They go, I'm going to jiu-jitsu you. And halfway through, like, oh, fuck, I'm going to die now. Like, you gotta relax, man. Relax.
It all depends on the person.
It's a bad feeling.
If you have somebody coming from, and this is where the personal side of things come in, if you have somebody coming from an endurance background, then they're not going to know how to dig for 7 minutes. And if you have somebody coming from a sprint background, they're not going to know how to last for 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's where the individual side of things comes in. If you're wanting to compete, it helps to have a coach that's programming specifically for you. Because, like, I have a guy who's done a 315 marathon. He got into CrossFit, and, like, when we were doing the aerobic stuff, it was a breeze, but he couldn't – when we did, like, a test or a 7-minute deal, he would finish and be – just fine and not have a great score.
Doesn't know
He's
how
like,
to
that
go
wasn't
fast.
That hard. I'm like, you just didn't go hard
you
enough.
Go faster.
Yeah. So it depends on
it's
the
amazing
person.
How, I mean, when you see, here's what you got to pay attention to for people out there who are learning and like trying to find what really matters in training. You just said that story of like the things you aren't basically good at, you got to dig those things out and develop them while you maintain the best of your ability things you are good at. So it's no different than what Louis prescribed. Like, look, I find somebody who's really shitty at reps. I think if I get them better at reps, it's going to help them be better for a powerlifter or a CrossFitter who's really good at long reps and duration. If I can just make them more explosive and make them be more explosive with my crazy-ass means, then they're going to be better. Mm-hmm. It's what McGoldrick had to face where he was a really explosive dude, super explosive, super aggressive and powerful and forceful. But if you get into a zone where you got to suffer for long duration, it's foreign territory because that's not what you're inclined to do. Mm-hmm. And it's what C.J. Martin talked about. These are ideas that with all these different disciplines, it's a central truth. So it's something you should really think hard about. It's obvious to you. And because it's really obvious, intuitive, people disregard it as being not the most important thing. It's really, it's everything.
Yeah.
It's a simple idea and one you must really embrace and understand.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and take a break real quick. When we come back, let's talk about how you find out, how you can assess whether you're a slow person or a fast person.
That should be easy.
Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
All right, and we're back.
We're back. Barbell Shrugged. That's what we are. You knew that already, baby.
Got Michael McElroy.
That's it.
On the microphone.
On the mic, spitting.
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit about people being able to push hard. Some people can go fast, and they don't know how to go long. And there's other people that know how to go long, but the moment you ask them to go fast, they just don't know how to push it to that point. How do you have like a quick assessment to figure out like where's this person coming from?
Yeah, I mean generally if it's exclusive coaching client, like an online client or a personal client in the gym, we'll go through some different tests as far as strength or aerobic stuff. If it's a group client, then we don't really go through that test because we're not going to get that specific with them. But if it is an individual client, we'll go through some different testing, most of which I've gotten from James and the assessment and program design, some of which I've just kind of developed on my own. But basically, you can just talk to them and get a little bit of their background, see kind of what their kind of approach on life is and kind of get a lot from that, and then just test them. So if they're coming from an aerobic background, if they're coming from running marathons or triathlons and stuff, chances are they're going to be not really know how to dig in and get into that hurt locker and just stay there. If they're coming from weightlifting or a sprint background or really not much of anything, then it may be a little different. Usually girls are a little bit
Whoa. Careful what you say, man.
Are a little harder to get. They're a little better at the aerobic stuff. Not as good as digging in and hurting. Guys are usually the other way around. But there's always a difference there. But a simple test, or like for the aerobic side of things, testing a 500-meter row and then testing a 5K row and seeing how their number are is relative to each other.
Dude, 5K row, the most I've ever done is 2K. I refuse to go over 2. Your ass, how do you even sit there for that long? Your ass just goes completely
numb. Or a 60-minute row.
60 minutes? Who does that?
Do you sit on a pillow for that?
I coach that.
Man,
that's all I'm going to say.
You ever done that? No. Dude, that's stupid.
I did a 2K row at a fat 300 pounds, by the way. Let me point that out. And like 740 or 7. That was pretty good, but that was not a fun time at all, man. That was not cool.
Well, that's where you can really tell a lot of it. A lot of it doesn't really – the time doesn't even matter that much. It's what they feel like. Mm-hmm. So if you see a person do a 500-meter row, it may be 212, but if they're laying on the ground for 10 minutes, that means they know how to dig in. They're just that bad out of shape, and they just need to get better at it. But if they row a 150 and they get off and they're like, is that all we're doing today? And you're like, yeah, we're about to do a lot more of that kind of stuff. So a lot of that is just looking at them and seeing how they feel after they do it and how they react to the prescription that's given and seeing if they
good
react
coaching
how
advice,
they're
this is common sense good coaching. Just carefully observing and getting a feel for what somebody can tolerate, what they can't, then having that be your direction.
Yeah, there's so much more to coaching than just prescribing something and looking at their results on a piece of paper.
Oh, I think that's got that's the easiest part of coaching. That's not where the results come from. You can have the most complicated, well put together, awesome program in the world, and without the other 80%, which is observation and communication and giving somebody to believe in what you're doing, that shit ain't gonna work at all. You might as well just do, you know, just some cookie cutter thing off the internet. It'll be the same effectiveness.
Yeah,
you're
I was about to say all these programs that whoever is programming, whether it be whoever the coach is, we don't have to name names, but
I'd prefer it if you did.
You can find all these different programs and just do them yourself if you don't want the personal touch to it. And that's the whole point of hiring a personal coach, is so that he can look at it and say, all right, this is why you did this, not just this is the score you got, so this is what we're going to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a why behind it.
So for the group coaching, we never really zoomed out all the way and got like the whole year-long macro cycle, which is kind of a hard concept if you're not really training for anything specific about why you would even have a macro cycle. So maybe you can touch on that too. But you talk about the 10 weeks for single leg training, and then briefly just kind of go through the whole rest of the year. That way we can see the big picture.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's very hard to approach that year-long approach without having a true goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of go by feel. It may not be the same every year. So I didn't I guess probably 3 months ago, I didn't know I was going to do a single leg phase after the open. I just looked at it, and shoulders were starting to hurt, and hips and stuff were starting to get out. So we just changed it.
It was obvious when you were in the moment.
Yeah, and then now we're going to go through, and obviously some of it still goes into what the client wants. And that's what, again, going back to, you can have the best program in the world, if not what the client wants, they're not going to stick to it, and they're not going to be happy with the results they're getting, even if they are getting results.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to go into more of an aerobic conditioning phase. We tested an aerobic workout, and then we're going to retest it after a while. I haven't actually laid out the program yet because this was last week. But we'll go through another 6 to 8 week phase, retest a couple of different things. Every time we test a few different things, even if we weren't training for it, just to see where we are, see how much we lost, see how much we gained. If we happen to gain something we weren't trying to,
all the data.
Is that a very well known thing in the gym? Like, hey, for the next 8 weeks, we're going to be focusing on this. Monday, we're testing this workout. In 8 weeks, we're going to retest it. That way, everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, it's pretty known in the gym. Put it out. Yeah, I put it out on the blog.
Makes perfect sense.
Some people are interested in it. Some people aren't. And I say that it doesn't change anything whether you're interested in it or not. Some people ask me about it. Some people say, so we're doing this because of this and that. And some people don't care. They come in and get their workout, and that's it. But, yeah, I post on the blog, on the website, at the beginning of the phase, this is what we're going to be working on. It's going to be generally set up like this throughout the week. So these are the kind of the day. I usually don't give day specific. If they figure that out, that's fine. The only reason I don't do that is so people don't try to skip certain days that they don't like.
I find some athletes try to game the
system
a little bit.
I don't lay it out.
You sons of bitches.
Yeah.
I'll skip these 2 days of training so I can do really well on this other day.
And the same son of a bitch will be like, I don't have the results I want.
We might be testing cumulative fatigue here.
Yeah.
Like, how well can you handle the volume of the week leading up? And then when they, game a workout, that's what they're doing.
Yeah. So I don't lay it out. And I was really more talking about the training weeks leading up to it. So I don't lay out Monday will be strength work or single leg work or Tuesday will be aerobic work or anything like that. I don't lay it out that simple just so they don't know specifically. If they catch on to it, then that's fine. Then if they care enough to catch on, they probably care enough to keep coming those days.
So you do have it set up like that? Mm-hmm. You just don't tell them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I just told them because they're
no.
Now they know the secrets are
if
out.
They're listening. They probably care enough to show up, like
yeah.
you said.
That's yeah.
right.
yeah.
So is that typically how it goes with your strength work? Like you have some type of set, you know, maybe not every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but like you have a
right.
set, like we squat and then the next day we press and then the next day we do Olympic stuff or whatever
yeah.
you do.
Yeah,
do.
There is a generally in whatever phase we're in, it's pretty set as far as Monday is this, Tuesday is this, and mm-hmm. so forth. So like this past phase, we did the single leg work and some upper body strength work on Monday, along with some muscle stamina stuff, mm-hmm. which where the squatting came in. So we would do like a 20-minute, every minute on the minute of 10 goblet squats and 3 strict pull-ups or something.
Goblet
like
squats
that.
Sound way more intense than they are. It sounds like goblet squat. You picture like crazy shit when you hear that, but it's really, oh, it's gonna cradle
yeah.
a kettlebell. I wish it was more intense. Can I reinvent that exercise to something more extreme, like something more metal, something more hardcore?
I'm gargoyle squats.
Gargoyle squats with bands tied to your chode. It'll make you very angry. You'll train so hard.
Makes me think we need some demon bells.
Oh man, those
things
are cool so
looking.
Sweet.
I do want some.
They're like 5 times more expensive, but I think it's every fucking penny is worth it. Like some, I like the chimp ones too. Like any, like I gotta get one.
Primal,
basically,
oh, yeah.
primal kettlebell
that makes them just Rogan. Like my tattoo. The Hanya mask, like demons
oh, yeah.
shapes.
Get a close up of that right there.
Yeah, look at that, homie. And every dumbass thinks that's Satan. That's not. Learn you some Japanese tattoo history and some opera. You sons of bitches.
I can see why they would think that is Satan.
Got yeah.
it's got horns.
A red face and horns.
But that's the uneducated mind
you're so,
making
you're so
assumption.
Stupid.
So when you meet somebody and you see some experience, rule number one, don't let your first assumption be the thing you think is the truth, homie. Dig a little deep. Everything is not as it first appears.
Spend all your time studying everything all the time.
I didn't yeah. say that.
Studying all the time.
But you said sounded way less romantic than what I said. But that's no surprise because I'm a romantic soul. And you're a lunk. You're a fucking lunk.
Sound the alarm.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I'm just joshing you, man. I love you. You're my homeboy.
I hate you.
Oh.
All right, so what other specific changes do you make for the fitness people versus the competition people? More specifically, we've been talking about fitness people. Let's go into the competition world a little
yeah.
bit. How do you program for those guys?
So generally the same as far as just from a broad general aspect. Like right now we still go through different phases. Mm-hmm. We simplify it during the off season, which is far away from the open, and then get more into the testers and stuff closer to the open. Obviously there's a lot more weightlifting, Olympic lifting mm-hmm. for the competition people. Obviously you have to be efficient at that to even have a chance at competing. Mm-hmm. A lot more heavy stuff, a lot more heavy stamina stuff. So for me, the one of the biggest things that's missing for CrossFitters is understanding that the one rep max is not hugely important for CrossFit. If you look across the boards,
not really, no. Well.
The one rep max, a true one rep max is never tested. There's a ladder maybe that you're going through, mm-hmm. but for
I would
instance,
call it true. It's not true because
yeah.
you're so fatigued.
No, mm-hmm. yeah, by the time Asia Barto got to 305 last year in the snatch. He had already done like 15 snatches
yeah.
in 15 minutes. So it's not a true one rep max. So muscle stamina or strength stamina is a very important ability to gain. And then the aerobic side of things, I think, is another thing that's missed that people don't see in the top athletes.
A huge bias towards pushing hard and getting that
right.
classic CrossFit stimulus.
You look at Rich Froning's program and he's doing 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off on the air down every day, every morning or on the rower, mm-hmm. doing a ton of aerobic work, and then mm-hmm. he's doing some strength work. And then
he still looks so
time.
Handsome.
Yeah.
Look at that guy.
So
they said he rows or does air down pretty much every day.
Yeah, and people just look at his program and be like, man, his volume is crazy high. And it's like, look at it closer. He's doing some recovery breathing work in the morning mm-hmm. So he can train again in the afternoon. It's,
right.
It's
yeah,
aerodynamic always not
and
as intense.
Rowing won't beat you up too much.
No.
You can do that every day.
Yeah, and it's not as intense as people think. They're not, you know.
Well, it's as intense as you want to make it. That's what's
yeah.
beautiful about it. You can get whatever you want out of it. Mm-hmm. It'll crush you like a fucking gnat if you push hard. Like those a minute long sprint.
Yeah.
One is all you need. Suffer, like, rest of the day, you're going to be trying to recover from that, and your quads are going to lock up like, fuck, like lobsters are pinching your quads the rest of the day. Or you just be cool on it. Be cool, man. Stretch it out. Just move. Feel your breath. Watch the clock. Get into the rhythm of your hands. Focus on the rhythm and pace, and you'll be. It's a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, again, that's that Z1 work or just the easy breathing work is something that has to be taught to a lot of CrossFitters, like I said, especially guys. I had a new guy come over to my gym. I'll throw his name out there, Chris Haynes. He knows who he is. He came.
I hope so.
He came.
Who am well, I? Am
what
I?
Am I doing? When I tell the story, he'll know who he
Makes
is.
Makes me think about Derek Zoolander.
He came over as a pretty good.
What's there to ponder?
He came over as a pretty good CrossFitter, and one of the earlier workouts he did on the competition blog was 20-minute row at a Z1 pace, you know, conversation pace. And he gets off, and he's, like, laid out on the ground for the next, like, 15 minutes. And I was like, you totally missed the point of that. Like, yeah. You're supposed
you
to
did
be.
You it wrong.
Yeah,
bro,
you're supposed to stand
so
up.
That was so awesome, that wad.
You're supposed to stand up and walk over to him and be like, I got a good sweat in. He's right. Like, oh, okay. So it took a little while to get him to learn what that meant. And it's just, again, the being able to see how they do things and going from there as far as the coaching goes. Mm-hmm. I forgot where we started with that point, though.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know either. Actually, you mentioned two things that sound kind of similar. You mentioned map training and Z1,
yeah,
which kind of sound like the same thing. Is there a difference between those?
Yeah, so map training is a little bit higher intensity. It's interval work, so you're still pushing a little bit harder where you can't maintain that pace for 60 minutes, but you're still at an easy breathing. You're still being able to repeat that effort over and over again. So if it's a three-minute effort, you do it maybe 10 different times. That'd be a lot. But if you do it 10 different times, your 3-minute effort still feels, the last one still feels like a little bit harder than the first one, but still a pretty good pace. Mm-hmm. Whereas Z1 is just continuous. There's no breaks in between.
Z stands for zone.
Yeah.
Zone.
Why can't you just fucking say zone 1 through 5? Why do you need all the other acronyms?
Like Z1 just sounds cool.
Yeah.
Z1, you know what that is? Yeah, coach, we go easy. What Z2? I know, not so easy. Right. What is Zine 18? Fucking really tough, coach. Boom. You don't need all the other acronyms. That's what I wish you just go. You don't need like to say anaerobic complexity zero sum training philosophy
anaerobic
training.
Anaerobic galactic.
Just fucking say go a little like we got into a little bit with Louis with he likes to have 800 definitions of strength, right? Explosive strength, absolute strength, this speed strength speed, like all that. I know what it is. I studied it for like 10 years of my fucking life. But I'm here to tell you, you can just throw all that shit out because it doesn't make any sense, and you don't need it. It just confuses what you're trying to go for. If you just say, everything is this, zone 1 through zone whatever, here are the definitions. If I tell you zone 3, you're not going too hard, but you're not going very easy. Makes sense? Yeah. Everybody's got it.
Well,
I wish people would just be more fucking common sense from time to time.
Well, I think I'm reading a book right now called...
Oh, shit!
The Art...
Tell me all about it.
The Art of Explanation, right? So... when you're talking to other coaches, and it talks about like people who have a certain level of knowledge, right? So the average athlete, you know, on a scale, you know, from A to Z, they're in the A. And if you're talking to someone else who's like coaching other coaches, they're probably on the understanding of Z, right? And
then assume.
And you probably have the average CrossFit coach, which is maybe an
we
M.
We know people who are in that position that aren't Z's.
So
I'm not going to name names.
So. Like, if you're talking to other coaches, it's a lot easier to say Z1 or something like that. Now, you tell the average client Z1, it may not be an appropriate use of the term. That's when you should throw that out. You should say, hey, you're going to go nice and easy, conversational pace. But if I'm talking to another coach, it's actually really nice to be able to talk to Michael here, and he says Z1.
I still think it's not necessary.
So it's like, but it's super quick, and we can get on with the conversation, and we can actually cover
unless
more ground.
Unless we start talking about it a lot.
So it is good to break it down on the podcast because there's a lot of people listening that don't know what Z1 is. But if it's just like me, Michael, and Doug, and, you know, we're just sitting here talking, and he says Z1, you know, it shortens. It's just like any industry. Like you go to work and you're at Smith & Nephew, and they're using these terminology. If I walk in the room, I have no idea what it's talking about. But if you had to explain it to me the whole time, the meeting just got 3 hours longer.
But here's the thing.
So anyways,
most of the people who are in the room with you who think, "Oh yeah, Z1," they don't know what the fuck that you're talking about either. Like they're not. They're people who you would assume maybe do. Like, I run into people who would be experts, but even in other realms, I do not use the buzzwords because I still think it's unnecessary. Like I love my hero of all fucking time, one of them, Richard Feynman, beautiful man. Read every book he ever read or wrote or was written about him. They're really beautiful. But here's a guy who won the Nobel Prize in physics doing something that's exceedingly complicated. I won't even try because I have no capacity to explain this to you. But where did he work on his problems? In the back of a strip club. Who did he explain it to? Strippers who were asking him what he was working on. What did he explain to you? He'd say, look, this thing I did, it's like a rubber band. You know when you stretch a rubber band and you release it? He always had that kind of explanation. Therefore, anybody who walked in the room.
That makes me think that the people that give out those Nobel Prizes are probably dummies. I can understand that physicist. We should give him a prize.
Here's the thing. Like Albert Einstein the same way. Even if you have physicists in the room and you have a new idea you want to explain to other accomplished physicists, it's probably helpful to at least fold in a lot of intuitive things because you're all still humans. And if you can explain things simpler, if you have the option, you should do that. That's
actually something that
Occam's razor. The choice between two choices, if you choose the more complicated one when you could choose a simpler explanation, that's your mistake. You're making a basic fallacy.
Well, that book talks a little bit about that too, is going back over in simple terms with people who already know what you're talking about. We'll get them, oh, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. They agree.
Yeah.
So, but there's a time and place for everything.
Yeah.
So explain it like a...
You guys did a good job explaining the art of explanation.
Hey, man. So, you just blew my mind.
So, anyways, back to alactic endurance.
back to MAP training or max aerobic power is kind of the difference you were asking about. Mm-hmm. And the difference is basically the intensity is just a little bit higher. So, it would be... It could be anything from Z2 to Z4.
How many Zs are there?
Five.
Five Zs.
Z5 is so intense.
If you pick up the ACE certification book, it's got all the Zs in there.
But the interval difference.
The NSCA book has it too.
It kind of goes back to again learning what kind of the athlete is. So even if you're working on the aerobic stuff, I could be working on the same aerobic pathway for certain people, but one person. So for Mike, for instance, we'll take McGoldrick. He probably started with a lot of 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off because he's a lot more explosive. So that 30 seconds, being able to maintain that, started fine. If you have somebody coming from a big aerobic background, we may start with 10 minutes on, 5 minutes off because they can maintain that and work them down to the 30 where they're going a little bit more intense. So, again, it goes back to figuring out what that athlete's like and building the engine that you're looking for from whatever angle works best. Same thing with the anaerobic stuff. To peak that aerobic system for the competition, you would start low, 30 seconds all out, which is obviously different. 30 seconds on the air down, like you were talking about.
Ooh, nasty.
Quads are screaming. 30 seconds all out.
30 seconds at 100% on the air down is pretty nasty interval.
The hardest thing you can do.
Working up to where just before competition, you may get to where not on the air down, but you're going 3 minutes all out in a CrossFit-ish workout, rest 10 minutes, repeat that two more times, which we've done some of that in the class. You know, a classic one is row 250. Again, this is a no PT one. It's just what came to my head. But row 250, 15 burpees, 25 kettlebell swings, 15 burpees, row 250. It's about, for the top guys, it's about 330. And then you rest 10 minutes.
That's
going to
work out.
It.
I can actually do. I do really well in that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going
to
do.
We're doing that on Friday.
Here's what I'm going to do. By the way, let me explain something to the audience. We did a little WOD at the end of our brawlout session that was rounds of 15 second, swing the kettlebell, battle rope, briefly pause, repeat.
On Friday you did?
Yeah. I felt just fine in that. I will. If anybody wants to throw down a WOD challenge that doesn't involve me moving around bars, like any, take the gymnastics stuff out. Be fair, because I'm 280 or whatever. Be so fair to me.
We'll be fair. And we'll
keep feet on the ground. I will go with you.
We'll lift the same weight. It'll be fair.
No, you can scale it up. You can do a proportion of something. I don't give a shit. Give me twice the kettlebell weight, and I'm fine, or whatever. I'll take you on. You pick the WOD.
Oh, you're going to take twice the kettlebell weight as me, and you're going to keep up?
Okay. Let's do it. Scale it, whatever you want. Whatever you think is fair, do it. Just all I ask.
You get the 26-pound kettlebell.
Yeah, all I ask is that you you don't do gymnastic things that I find impossible. Let me keep my feet on the ground, and I'll do whatever you want.
It's like playing horse and asking me to dunk.
Yeah, right. It's not going to happen. I will lose. I forfeit now. I'm done. I cash out my chips. It's not going to happen. Yeah, I picked the wad.
Was that
muscle
a short
ups.
Joke on yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, like for me, I'm not gonna do anything muscle up related. I can't. You win. You got me. You're a big man. You're a bigger man than me, figuratively speaking. That's how it goes.
We'll figure something out.
We will.
So what kind of processes do you have put in place for the online clients? Does everyone go through the same kind of structured beginning where you kind of assess where they're at virtually? Like that's a hard thing to do when you're not meeting someone face-to-face. What do you have put in place for that?
Yeah, generally the first week is a testing week, and obviously you can't figure everything out, but just some real basic, simple workouts. You know, a couple of one-rep maxes in there and a couple of conditioning workouts that I know where I want the times to be, and then just getting feedback on that, seeing, you know, asking them to post comments as far as how it felt, where was the breakdown, what caused you to slow down in this one, why did you miss the lift, if it was a, you know, front squat one rep max, why did you lift the lift, were you stuck in the bottom, were you stuck halfway up, so basically just a testing week at the beginning, and then kind of going from there.
What do you do about like mobility and technique and injuries and things like that?
The technique stuff is video, just video and getting them to send as many videos as they can, and I'll respond as quickly as possible, using obviously coach's eye to help critique that.
I think Vine is a good choice for that too, because it's so quick and easy.
It's very fast.
Yeah.
Coach's eye, you can draw angles and look at bar paths and things like that and slow it down.
Speak on it too.
And speak, in the background. Good.
And then as far as the mobility goes, just tell them if there's specific things that I see in any of their lifts from the video, basically just use Mobility Wad as that resource and try to find some links.
Why reinvent such a good resource?
Yeah, I mean, find some
really
links
awesome.
To those and just send them that, tell them to do it.
Mm-hmm. You read Supple Leopard?
I've started it. I hadn't really gotten all the way through it, though.
Okay, it's very good. I'm about 70% the way through with it. Yeah, great resource. If you haven't read Supple Leopard out there, everyone pick up a copy of that. iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do regular books anymore. iBooks is where it's at.
Oh, you don't have a hard copy? You have the digital copy?
I did buy a hard copy, but I ended up giving it to Rob to read, and I bought it on iBooks. I'm more likely to read on iBooks because I can lay in bed with the black background and the white text and kind of dim it down with the lights off, and then I can read in the dark and just turn it off and go to bed.
Yeah,
I like that way better than holding a
big
book when I'm laying in bed.
And as you enter dreamland, you know, the Supple Leopard tones are wrapped around your brain. You assimilate all that beautiful knowledge.
I just dream about mobility all night.
I do find
you get more mobile.
I do find I do that morning exercise that I've been emailing out.
Masturbation?
To you guys. No,
that's my.
That's not an exercise. It's a ritual.
I do this mental exercise for about 20 minutes in the morning, which I've been emailing you guys the results of. Mm-hmm. It's going to remain a secret to the rest of the world. But I do a mental exercise where I think about our customers and stuff. And
you're meditating.
Yeah, it's a kind of like a meditation thing. Mm-hmm. But I find that whatever I was reading before I went to sleep the night before has a huge influence on like my perception of what I think people want to hear about and stuff like that and learn about. Mm-hmm. So.
He's like, I don't know why I told you that, but
it made me think about it because you were talking about someone said something about like
I want to
how you're gonna dream about Supple Leopard.
I want to have James on the show to talk about
my next day.
We need to have James from OPT on the show to delve into those kind of things more often, like those little, I know he's a little out there. I think we'd have a beautiful discussion with a guy about like meditation, how that all those angles fold into how you program and how you apply all that beautiful art to the cold, hard, sharp edges of numbers and prescriptions that is only the skeleton of the whole training view. Like he does
sounds
a good
like
job.
Sounds like a conversation for the Barbell Buddha.
Yeah, that's definitely a
man. That's gonna be my dream. We get the equipment shit figured out and get that going, we'll have him on.
I know you got Justin Thacker coming down to y'all's place.
Yeah.
Here pretty soon
September
to work on
28th and 9th.
Okay, is that a seminar that anyone
seminar,
can go to?
Yep.
Okay.
Seminar. We'll have a link up pretty soon.
And you haven't met him yet, is that right?
No.
You saw him on our show, and you know he's a good friend of ours?
Yeah.
Which he's really is fantastic for weightlifting, so I'm really excited about that for you guys.
I just like his approach from what y'all were saying, and what he was kind of saying is learning the ins and out of all the different systems, and he sounds like he has his own approach to it, as opposed to just picking up the Bulgarian system or picking up the Russian system and just kind of implementing that. Mm-hmm. He has the backgrounds and teaches the lifts differently and likes to. I like the fact that he apparently likes to focus on the basic lifts as far as, I guess he's talking about squat, deadlift, and you know basic strength before they move into the weightlifting side of things, kind of like focusing on strict pull-ups before kipping pull-ups.
Right.
It just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty good about taking knowledge from lots of different sources and compiling it together into his own system. And a lot of people are a one-trick pony. They know weightlifting, or they know nutrition, right, or they know this or that. Mm-hmm. That dude knows a lot about a bunch of different topics, so he can talk very comprehensively about not just fitness or weightlifting or nutrition. He can put it all together, and man, that guy can answer any question that we've ever thrown at him.
He's learned how to see the matrix.
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon. I can see the code. Between everything, you can see the common elements, how they fit together. It's if you can do that, if you got a guy around you can do that, you should listen to that guy. Mm-hmm. There's your friendly neighborhood tip from Chris this week. Meet a smart person, listen to them. That's what this show, that's the culmination point of this show. Meet somebody who's really smart, you should probably listen to them.
I mean, that's I think that's the, as joking aside, I think that's where, I mean, that's what CrossFit started around, mm-hmm. and somehow it's kind of lost that sight. And coaches, I think coaches are getting better at it, definitely, but just learning from resources outside of CrossFit. There's more stuff than CrossFit powerlifting, CrossFit endurance, CrossFit, you know, whatever. There's more resources out there in the strength and conditioning world than just those things, and I think that's where, if you're looking for a coach, seeing if they've done other stuff other than just CrossFit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I had beef, I'd say CrossFit sometimes is guilty of drawing, you know, putting a fence up around their thing. And, mm-hmm. and certain people are on the outside of that fence who have a lot to offer. So I would not stop there. I would go out and try to explore to see who else has a different take, even if it's weightlifting. Like, there's good mm-hmm. people in CrossFit teach weightlifting. There's other people who have different views on it who can add to your understanding. If they're outside the little spectrum of what you see in the HQ world, that shouldn't stop you from exploring.
Yeah, a lot of those certifications are really good, but once an organization gets really big, it usually starts moving really slow too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's kind of might be happening. That might be why there's a lot of coaches on the outside that, you know, they're able to stay very innovative and move really fast. I think CrossFit might be getting a little
Don't
do it no fault of their own. Just the nature of a growing business.
You're this close from getting into like a discussion of government and why it sucks. I can feel your mind turning.
I had no such thought, and now you've injected it.
Uh-oh.
It's too late.
We're now going in. Just don't bring it.
Our founding fathers, Liberty, Atlas Shrugged, and Rind, Ron Paul.
Ron Paul.
Oh no! What have I done?
Well, now I got to go on a rant.
No, don't go on.
I'm not doing that. No, we'll save that for Barbell Buddha.
Yes, Friday nights at some time. It's different every week.
Stay on your toes.
Stay on your toes, folks.
All right.
I think
we killed it. All right. So, Doug, I'm gonna let you go first. Plug something.
Plug us.
We got the 6-month muscle gain challenge that is starting here on July 8th, and that is basically damn near full at this point. What we got? We got a few spots left, and that's it.
On what?
On the 6-month muscle gain challenge. Where were you?
I started thinking about lunch.
Okay. No, well, never mind.
No, it's full.
It's pretty much full at this point.
We're done.
Okay.
So, but if you're wanting to get in a few months, we'll be opening up one that's going to start in a few months. Make sure to go in the shop and sign up for that. You can put your email address in, and we'll notify you when the next round comes through.
Yeah, if you go to muscle.barbellshrug.com, then you can put your name on the waiting list for 3 months from July 8th. So if you listen to this episode in the future, we usually do it about every 3 months. The next one starts July 8th.
Don't listen to it in the past.
3 months.
Listen in the future.
Listen in the future. So 3 months later, we'll probably start another one. So if you want to get on that list, go to muscle.barbellshrug.com, and you can sign up as part of putting your name on the list to get a cool video of us kind of telling you how we suggest you structure your meals if you want to eat mostly paleo but also put on some muscle mass in the process.
There you go.
All right. Go ahead, Chris. You're next. Be thinking of something.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have just two things.
He's got it down.
We've now got a little bit of rhythm. We got the Barbell Buddha podcast going. We had a reboot episode that we shot this last Friday night in my office. It was a blast. We broadcast it live on Google Hangouts. So next Friday, around that magic witching hour, Memphis time, about 8, 9 p.m., whenever the tequila starts working, we throw out the links. Join us live. Also, I've got the show now submitted to iTunes. Hopefully that's up. We can share the information for that, like maybe this week. Depends on how slow they are. That's my first plug. Also, go on Barbell Buddha Facebook page. Like us. You'll see some cool stuff there. It's a little bit like the Barbell Shrug page, but a little more of my slant, the content that'll go up there and my blog posts. So stay up to stay informed, stay linked. And then I'll start the plug for Progress, the greatest book anyone ever wrote is Progress by Me. Go on Amazon.
Definitely the greatest book you've ever written.
It is. it's on iTunes for iPad. It's on Amazon for anything, your Kindle or any app you're running on your iPhone for Kindle. I'm playing with doing a paper edition because I've got some paper copies now for personal consumption and for close friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. If I can figure out a way to make the cost controllable, if we can find the ratio between what it'll cost to print, what it'll cost to sell and all that, well, I'll make it available on barbobuddha.com. But I'm thinking about ways. So be patient with me as I explore how to do that.
All right.
All right. Yeah, I got a few things. We got Ryan Moody coming with the Explosive Seminar. He's coming August 10th. It's our gym. That's open for anybody. We've got Justin Thacker coming for the Weightlifting Seminar September 28th and 9th. Like I mentioned, we got the Weightlifting Club started now, the first Weightlifting Club in Mississippi. So if you want some more information on that, contact us. And then lastly, personal program design, whether you're in the Jackson area for personal coaching or anywhere. We can do online coaching. Just email crossfit2717@gmail.com, and our website is crossfit2717.com. So check us out there.
Excellent.
All right.
All right. Make sure to, if you enjoy this podcast, head over to iTunes, give us 5 stars, leave a comment, make it cool. Make sure to go to Facebook and like us there.
Like us everywhere.
Follow us on Twitter. And make sure to – oh, yeah, we're now using – what's that thing called? Vine? Which is super cool.
Vine is cool, man. Vine's got a lot of potential.
I'm addicted to Vine, but you can follow Barbell Shrug Podcast. So that's just at Barbell Shrug Podcast. If you go to your iPhone, download the Vine app. Super cool. We're going to post short 6-second videos all the time. I know all of us are on there personally as well.
I haven't used it yet.
You'll be able to find us. I'm posting about a video a day. But yeah, follow us on that, Instagram, all that stuff. So. Yay.
Yay.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
See you next time.